as it were, permeated by that which one can designate as one's own ego. The ego permeates the inner life of the human soul and holds it together. A sense perception becomes a soul experience when it is taken up out of the domain of senses and inserted into the domain of the ego. You can obtain a justifiable idea of this situation if you present or occupy yourself with the following simple consideration. For example, you feel the warmth, perceive the warmth of a certain object. As long as you touch, contact this object, there is an interaction present between the ego and the external world. In this interaction, there forms itself within the ego the mental image, the Vorstellung, of the warmth condition of the corresponding object. If one removes your hand from the object, so there remains behind in the ego this Vorstellung, this mental image, this mental concept. This now deforms something of a Wesenhaftes, of an essential nature, a real nature within the soul life. You should not fail to notice that this Vorstellung is that which separates itself from the sense experience and continues to live further within the soul. Now, within certain limits, one can designate the experiences which man makes with the help of the senses and which then continue to live in the soul. One can designate within certain limits, call it his world, one's own world. If, however, you begin to meditate, contemplate, think about the fact of how this world enters into his domain, you will be forced to realize and you will be forced to presuppose for this world the existence of another world, another existence. Since in what way can this world be only soul experience? Through what can man know something of it? Solely through the fact that he has senses. Before the world presents itself as sense perception for this human being, these senses themselves must first be born out of the world. The world would become for the human being without sound if he did not possess a sense of hearing. The world would be without warmth for the human being if he did not possess any warmth sense. So correct is this, so also is it clear about the other fact that in a world in which there did not exist anything to be heard, then no hearing sense would be able to arise. In a world which did not possess any warmth, there would not form itself in the human being a sense for warmth. All you need to do is to remember the fact, think the fact, conceive the fact of how beings who live within darkness do not develop any eyes, or by beings who have developed eyes under the influence of light, these eyes disintegrate, disappear, decay away when the carriers of these eyes exchange their residence from a residence in light, and they reside in a place of darkness. You need to do nothing further than to realize this in complete clarity in order to say to yourself that that particular world which is given to the human being through his senses and upon which he is able to build up his soul life, that behind that particular world there must be at its basis another world which makes possible the existence of this sense world through the fact that it permits senses to arise out of itself. And this world cannot exist in the domain of the sense aspect, but it must completely precede it before the sense world can exist and become the basis of your soul life. Prior to all that, there must exist another nonsense world which conjures out of the human being his senses. So when you meditate upon this, you get an idea of the fact that behind this sense world there exists another world, a world which itself cannot be perceived in a sense way, a world, however, out of which the sense world lifts itself up out of it as out of an ocean of existence existing behind it. The warmth sense perceives warmth, but behind that there must exist something which developed and produced the sense of warmth. The eye perceives the light. Behind that, there exists something which configured the eye. One must be able to distinguish between a world as it is given to the human being through the senses and a world which is at the basis of this particular world. Is it possible to say nothing about this world as a result of pure contemplation? Actually, you can say something about this world if you contemplate the following. Through the interaction of the human being with the external world as it is mediated in the sense perception, there arises within the human being the world of Vorstellung, of mental images, the mental world, the feeling world, and the desire world. Completely so can one conceive about the relationship of this presupposed other world to the human being. Through this other world, there arise within the human being the organs of sense perception. With all that which permits itself to be experienced within the sense world, present with all that which is experienced in the sense world is the human being there with his ego, which there builds itself up the soul world on the basis of the sense experiences. This building up, this construction of the sense organs, this must necessarily precede all sense perception, and it must occur in a realm of reality in which no sense perception can actually penetrate. Now, in parenthesis, Rudolf Steiner writes, scarcely does it need to be thought and present the objection which can fleetingly occur to a person that nevertheless man is able to observe the building up of the sense organs taking place in another being. What man can there perceive, what man perceives there, indeed he perceives through the senses. One can indeed observe how a hammer arises without at the same time making use of the hammer. You obviously don't need a hammer to observe how a hammer arises. However, you cannot observe in a sense way how a sense organ arises without utilizing this sense organ. End parenthesis. Prof. Steiner continues. It is quite justified to speak about the fact that the sense organs must have been built up out of a world which is itself supersensible, a supersense world, and the depicted nature, beingness of the sense perceptions provides contemplation, points of attachment to be able to say something more about this world. Since the sense organs ultimately appear as the result of the activity of this world, so one can speak of it about the fact that this activity is a manifold activity. One can say, as it were, from so many sides there works upon, from so many different sides there works upon the human being as many sides as there are sense organs present. There pour themselves the streams of this world into those springs in which the sense organ lie exist, so that man out of these springs is able to create for his soul life, because that which is created out of these springs, namely his soul life, ultimately finds itself within the ego. So it must, although it proceeds from different sides, it must nevertheless originally stream out of something which is works in itself in a uniform way. Within this ego there builds itself together the different sense perception add themselves together into a unity. They represent themselves within this unity as something belonging together. That which beats on the soul, which anschlag, which beats at the soul in the sense perception, that is so that the inner life of the ego can detach itself from that. Out of that, it is realizable, you can see it is realizable that behind the sense perceptible world, there is present in a supersensible world just as many sources of activity as there are sense organs present. These sources of activity reveal themselves through their workings, which exist in the building up of the sense organs. The domain of these sources of activity thus comprehend a number of sources which is equal to the number of the sense organs. And one can say that the extreme limit of this kingdom is designated through the ego on the one side and through the so-called touch sense on the other side. Even though the sense of touch is just as little permitted to be designated as belonging to the actual sense life as little as the ego can be permitted to belong to the sense life. Here you have a source of activity, sources of activity which produce the senses, and on the one border of them, the one limit of this domain, you have the ego, and the other you have the touch, and neither the ego nor the touch can be considered to be senses. In other words, there's no such thing as an ego sense, Nor is there such a thing as a touch sense. Those are merely the limits which designate the other senses. That which belongs to the ego has detached itself from the sense perception. And so, because it is a quite inner experience, it can no longer be numbered as belonging to sense perception. However, it is the nature of every one of the sense perceptions that they can become ego experiences. Hence, because of that, every sense organ must, out of the supersensible world, contain in itself the rudiments, be predisposed in such a way that it can provide or supply something which can become an ego experience. And the so-called sense of touch provides, as it were, experiences of an opposite kind. That which is told or said about an object by means of the touch sense represents itself as something which exists quite external to the human being. Thus, the human being as a totality must be built up out of the supersensible world in such a way man is able to confront, on the basis of the touch experiences, man can confront for himself a world which lies outside him, a world which confronts him. So when one surveys the human soul life as it develops itself on the basis of the sense experiences, so the sense organs appear as solid points, as in an umkreis, as in a circle, circuit, a circumference, umkreis. And the ego appears as that which is of a mobile nature, which in its differentiated running through, passing through this circuit, acquires for itself the soul experiences. The whole building up, the whole construction of the human organism, insofar as it imprints itself into the sense organs, in the sense organs, this whole construction of the human being, human organism, insofar as it deals with the sense organs, points to its causative factors within the supersensible world. Just as many sense domains as there are, so are there such as many causes. And within this domain, in the domain of these causes, there indicates itself a uniform, supersensible principle, which indicates itself in the organizing towards the ego unity. Now, a further consideration demonstrates that the supersensible activity which reveals itself in the construction of the sense organs works in differentiated ways. In the three domains of the life sense, one's own motion sense, one's sense of equilibrium, the working goes from the inner aspect of the human corporeality, goes out of that and comes out of the inner aspect of the human corporeality and reveals itself right to the limits of the skin. In the case of the smell, taste, sight, warmth, and hearing sense, this kind of activity is likewise present. Nevertheless, with them there works together another activity, which one must ascribe as a direction coming from the external towards the inner being of the corporeality. The hearing organ, for example, is a member of the human organism. Within this organism, the forces must be working, effective, which configure this organ in a way corresponding to the nature of the total body. However, from the outside, there must come to meet the supersensible forces which are hidden within the world of sound must proceed from the outside. These forces which build this organ precisely develop it in such a way that this organ becomes receptive for sound. And so with the designated five sense organs of smell, taste, sight, warmth, and hearing, you have to conclude that there is a meeting of these forces, as it were, on the surface of the human body. There work forces in the direction from the innermost of the body towards the external, and so configure the single sense organs in a way corresponding to the nature of the total organism. Those forces that come to meet it, they work from the outside towards the inwards and imprint the organs into the body so that they can adapt themselves to the different manifestations of the external world. The case of the life, motion, and equilibrium senses, only one of these two directions is present, namely the direction which strives from inwards towards outwards. Furthermore, it yields itself that in the case of the speech sense and the concept sense, in the case of the language sense and the concept sense, the direction from inwards towards outwards falls away. That these senses are built into the human being from the external, from the outside towards the inwards. The language sense and the concept sense, thus, that reveals itself in such a way that the characteristic supersensible activity manifests itself in such a way that they, in reference to their configuration, already approximate that of the inner soul life. Now, insofar as now the ego, in the previously characterized way, must be looked upon as being predisposed in the supersensible forces which look after the building up of the senses, insofar as you know that, you can say to yourself that within this ego, within the ego, these forces disclose their own nature to the highest degree. Only, as it were, in this ego, the particular nature has been contracted together, zusammengeschrumpft, pushed, contracted together, shrunk together into a point, the point of the ego. If one observes this ego, considers this ego, so it shows itself as a essential nature, as in a point, which in the richest fullness rests as spread out in a supersensible world and manifests itself out of the supersensible world only in its workings, in the building up of the senses. Touch sense reveals itself also in this connection as the counterpole of the ego. In the touch sense, there reveals itself, there manifests itself that aspect of the supersensible world, or aspect of the extra supersensible world, that aspect which is, which cannot become the inner experience of the human being, but through it can be revealed the corresponding inner experiences. Touch sense, you have that aspect of the supersensible world which cannot become inner experience, but which through this touch sense can there reveal itself the corresponding inner experiences. Through the touch sense, the corresponding inner experiences are disclosed. The touch sense, there reveals itself that aspect of the supersensible world which cannot become the inner experience of man. So you have this contrast of the touch sense to the ego experience. But it continues. Now, as sense type of phenomena, anthropology describes the sense organs as sense type phenomena. And this now very well corresponds to the results which we've described, the fact that this anthropology does not designate any special organs for the life sense, the sense of one's own movement, and one's equilibrium sense. Those forces which have been designated as working from inwards to outwards configure the human being in general as a sense organism capable of maintaining itself and experiencing itself. As it were, the organs of these three sense domains spread themselves out into the general corporeality. It's only in the case of the sense of equilibrium that anthropology points to the three semicircular canals as indicating a special sense organ, because with this sense, man enters in an elementary relationship to the external world. Namely, he enters into relationship to the directions of space. For the five middle senses, there exists separated organs which are easily recognized insofar that their development, their work together, the described capacities from outside to inwards and from inwards to outwards, these capacities work together in a manifold way. In parenthesis, Rudolf Steiner writes, if also in connection with the sense for warmth, anthropology still has a doubt about the existence of an external sense organ, nevertheless, this doubt will solve itself as science begins to progress. Close parenthesis. As far as the sense for sound and the concept sense, there cannot be described external organs in the same way as you can describe external organs for the other senses, because the organs for the sound sense and the concept sense already exist in that particular domain where the bodily life makes itself inwards itself into the soul life. The organ of the touch sense, however, will be discovered more and more by science as something which must be in the sense of what I have previously described. Must so work that the human being, in contact with the objects, as it were, retreats back into himself, closes himself from the domain of this sense by locking himself up in his inner body experiences. Thus, in those spread out structures which are spread out over the whole surface of the body, outspread structures spread out over the whole surface of the body, which one regards as the organs of touch, in those one must recognize something which in the main is concerned with a drawing back, a tsurukziin, a drawing back of the surface of the body from the contacted external world. The touch organs are thus actually a configurating for the inner of the human form of the body. They provide the body the form through which it isolates itself from all sides of the contacting external world. Now, in parenthesis, and those places which the touch organs show a greater sensitivity, man relates himself differently to the external world from those places which are of less sensitivity. It pushes itself forward in the one or other case, as it were, more or less in confrontation with the external world. Out of this you notice that the form of the body in a certain connection is a result of the particular character of the touch organ at the various places of the surface of the body. End parenthesis, and end of this thesis, which is entitled The World Which Is at the Basis of the Senses. Now we come to his essay number 4, entitled The Life Processes. Rudolf Steiner starts, "In the sense life of the human being, there now members itself something else into it. And also in this something else, one can distinguish a number of domains. There presses in the first place, the process through which the inner life of the body is maintained from the external. There presses into it the breathing. In this process of breathing, the life of the body contacts itself with the external world, confronts itself to the external world as it were in a way in which it could not further exist, in order to be able to receive from this external world the force which enables itself to continue to exist." Now, if you don't understand this typical Steinerian sentence, don't bother. You'll find out what he means later on. Professor continues, "In these words, approximately, that is said which reveals itself to the human being in connection with the process of breathing, about which you enter into the results of the sense aspect science. And this last science belongs to anthropology." I have an idea what Rudolf Steiner is trying to say here is something like this. Let's put aside for the moment that which anthropology talks about and focus in a different way. realize that you couldn't exist unless you breathed, the body couldn't exist unless it breathed in air. That's what he's saying here, I'm sure. Continues, what we characterize here, man experiences directly in life, in his desire for air, in his observation of his resistance in life to life if he lacks air. We have Rudolf Steiner characterizing the what is involved in the process of breathing. And he characterizes it in a way that makes me almost scream. I would feel far happier if he presented it in the way that I present it, Rick Mansell. And I would say something like this. My dear friends, in the last essay, I talked about the domain of the senses. Now I want to speak about the domain of the life processes. Now, just as much as you have a number of domains in the life of the senses, so you have a number of domains in the life processes. And the first one is the domain of breathing, the breathing processes. The physical body could not exist without breathing in from the external world, breathing in air. The body needs air, and it gets asphyxiated if it doesn't have air. Okay, finished. After I've said all this, if you're a good student of anthroposophy, you'd probably want to lynch me. Go back to the manuscript. Russell continues. A further process in this domain is that which one can characterize as Wärmung, warming. In order for man's bodily life to continue to exist, man is pointed to the fact of having to develop a definite degree of warmth within his inner body. Degree of warmth which does not depend upon processes which determine the warmth of his environment, but depends upon processes which occur in his own inner being. Such a way that man can maintain his own warmth within certain definite limits in spite of how the external warmth may be. A third of the life processes is that of nutrition. Through nutrition, the bodily life enters into such a connection with the external world that the substances which are used up by the body are replaced by substances which he takes in from the external world. Then we have the third one is the nutrition processes. Now, if the nutrition processes are to occur, then there must be added a fourth process. Already in the mouth, the taken up foodstuff must enter into an interaction with the spittle which is separated out of or secreted out of the body. Similarly, there occurs on the further process of digestion such a secretion process. One can designate it as the fourth process belonging to this domain of the life processes and designated with the term Absonderung, secretion. Now, a self-observation of the body now shows that attaching this self to this process of secretion, another process attaches itself. In that secretion process which serves digestion, that which is secreted, that which is separated, is only capable of so transforming the food it takes in such a way that it can be taken up into the life of the body. Man now must also be able to secrete or separate something which is able to enter into this body life. It must so transform the nutrition food substances that they are able to serve the building up of his body. At the basis of this, there exists a process far transcends that which occurs in the process which we characterized as secretion. And this process we shall designate with the name of Erhaltung process. Erhaltung is preservation, maintenance, conservation. It refers to those processes which can convert the nature of the foodstuffs in such a way that it can form part of the body and maintain the body to exist as a corporeal body. It is the Erhaltung process. A further process yields itself when you direct your attention upon the growth of the human being. This growth goes beyond the mere Erhaltung. To the Erhaltung process, which would so permit the body to remain as it is in a definite point of time, there is added something else, which we can designate as the growth process. The Erhaltung process and the growth process achieves their conclusion in the fact that man represents the completed, finished body in a quite definite form. Now, the configuration of the human being from inwards outwards, from innen heraus, from in outwards, into a quite definite form structure is called, shall be called Hervorbringung, procreation. Die Fortpflanzung, the reproduction, represents itself there as a repetition of this Hervorbringung. The Erhaltung process and the growth process achieves their conclusion in the fact that man represents the completed, finished body in a quite definite form. Now, the configuration of the human being from inwards outwards, from innen heraus, from in outwards, into a quite definite form structure is called, shall be called Hervorbringung, procreation. Die Fortpflanzung, the reproduction, represents itself there as a repetition of this Hervorbringung. That which belongs to one's own body is so hervorgebracht, so brought forward, that it remains united with the human being. In the case of Fortpflanzung, in the case of reproduction, that which is brought forward makes it self-manifested towards the external world. Because here, in the first place, it is to be spoken of the human being as something which is a self-enclosed bodily individual, because of that, we shall not consider the process of reproduction. Now, if you're confused, let me try to unconfuse you. In German, there are two words. One is called Hervorbringung, bringing forth, and is trying in the dictionary it said procreation, and the other is Fortpflanzung, which is reproduction. Stein is saying in the last sentence that he's not going to deal with the process of Fortpflanzung, reproduction, but procreation, whatever that blood war might mean. It's confusing. Anyway, I'm not going to translate the word Hervorbringung as reproduction or procreation, anything like that at all. What I'm going to say to you is this. I'm going to use the word Hervorbringung, and I want you to remember that when I'm using this word Hervorbringung, Rick Mansell speaking, that's the word Steiner uses to indicate his this seventh of the life processes. This hervorbringung is a term applied if you focus your attention upon the growing human being and realize that in addition to what he calls their Erhaltung processes, those processes by means of which the bodily food products are converted into constituents of the physical human body, in addition to that, the human body grows and it reaches an ultimate form. Man from inward outwards grows until he reaches a quite definite form structure, form configuration. And that process, that life process which occurs there, is going to call Hervorbringung. That's why he says when he uses Hervorbringung, I'm not going to take in mind this process of procreation or conception, whatever you talk about there, but since I'm going to consider the individual himself as a self-contained entity, I'm just going to disregard the fact that he is produced by man and woman coming together. That's what he's saying here. Continues. To the processes which here have been designated as breathing, warming, nutrition, secretion, Erhaltung, growth processes, and Hervorbringung, there attaches itself now for the human being in a similar way inner experiences, just as in the inner just as within the ego, inner experiences attach themselves to the processes of the sense type perceptions. Just as you have inner experiences within the ego associated with the sense perceptions, so you have, similarly speaking, in a similar way, inner experiences attaching themselves to these life processes. To the breathing, warming, and nutrition processes that attach themselves feeling experiences, which in their intermediate conditions are less observed, which, however, immediately make their appearance when this condition is disturbed towards one side or to the other side. The breathing process cannot proceed in the appropriate way, so there occur conditions of anxiety and the like. Disturbance of the warmth condition announces itself in a frost feeling or in a sweat feeling, an overheated feeling. Disturbances in nutrition reveal themselves in hunger and thirst. We can say that attached to the breathing process, the warming process, and the nutrition processes, inner experiences attach themselves, which reveal themselves in a kind of feeling of comfort. These experiences are always there. They lie at the basis of that, which in the case of a disturbance expresses itself as a feeling of not feeling well, of uncomfortableness, of hunger, etc. Now, a real self-mindfulness demonstrates itself that such feeling experiences are also connected with the processes of secretion, Erhaltung, growth, and Hervorbringung. Just remember how conditions of anxiety and fear can show themselves in an extraordinary super degree of sweat separation, sweat secretion. And likewise, one will be able to agree that the processes of secretion, which proceed in its way, in its corresponding limits, are connected with a feeling that can express itself in a general feeling of comfort. How one can realize that all secretions carried on with a certain condition of feeling, which withdraws itself from the noticing of your consciousness as long as these processes of secretion proceed in a normal way. The more A self-mindfulness will demonstrate that such feeling experiences are also connected with the Erhaltung process, with the growth process and the Hervorbringung process. One can perceive, for example, that the feeling of the strength of the youth is the expression, the strength feeling of the youth is an expression of that which attaches itself to the inner experiences associated with the process of growth. These inner feeling experiences now are something which in the human being face the processes of breathing, warming and growth in a similar way as in the ego are inner experiences attached to the sense perceptions as they face the processes of these perceptions. Hence it is possible to speak about the fact that, for example, the breathing attaches itself to an experience or is associated with the breathing, there is an experience, just as the hearing associates itself with the experience which is designated as sound. Just as hearing is associated with sound, so there is a similar experience associated with breathing. Only the degree of significance or of noticeableness with which the external sense perception is inwardly after experienced is a much higher noticeability than that which we are what we're designating here as the inner experiences associated with the life processes. As it were, within the ego human being there conceals itself another human being which builds itself up out of inner experiences, just as the ego human being builds itself up out of the experiences of the external sense perception. This ego human being, which lies under the ego man, is only noticed really in life. It announces itself to the ego human being as the disturbances of his experiences. Just as little as you are permitted to throw together the processes of sense perception, those processes which member themselves with the ego, just as little, for example, can you do this in relationship to the breathing process and the inner experiences of a feeling nature which are connected with this breathing process. One can most easily be tempted to disregard these inner experiences in their particular nature and to say that in the main there exists no essential difference between them and that which develops itself under the influence of the sense perceptions. Now it must be admitted that the difference between the two kinds of inner experiences, for example, for the life sense and the inner feeling type of experience in connection with the breathing or warmth process, that the difference between these two kinds of inner experiences have no special significance. Through an exact observation, it can easily be found out if one keeps in mind the following. To a sense experiences, there belongs the fact that a judgment can only attach itself, or can be attached itself, only through the ego. Everything which the human being performs under the influence of a judgment must, when it relates itself to a sense perception, so be that the judgment occurs within the ego. For example, one perceives a flower. Then one forms a judgment, this flower is beautiful. Then there inserts itself between the ego and then the ego inserts, thus then the ego inserts itself between the sense perception and the judgment. What now with the processes of breathing, warming and nutrition, etc., is called forth as inner experience that shows das Weiß durch sich, that shows through itself without something entering in between as something similar which occurs with the ego in relationship to the judgment. In the experience of hunger, there is immediately the pointing to the fact of something which corresponds to the hunger and is so connected with it as that man connects as a judgment which is attached to a sense perception. Just as with judgment, judging, the activity of the ego integrates itself with the sense perception, so there shows itself integrated an external something with the hunger without the ego performing this integration. This integration therefore has to be designated as something which reveals itself instinctively. And such a thing also applies to all the inner experiences which are connected with the breathing, nutrition, and growth processes. Hence, therefore, one must distinguish between the comfort one feels with breathing, the comfort you feel in warmth, insofar as they are instinctive exterior experiences, and you must distinguish them from the corresponding perceptions of the life sense. The waves of the instinctive must, as it were, first beat onto the ego human being in order to achieve the domain of the life sense. Now, the whole network of inner experiences, which through the indicated processes has to be through the indicated processes behind the ego human being, this network of inner experiences has to be ascribed to the astral human being. Again, with the name of astral man, nothing other should be attached to it other than what I designate here. As now the ego human being takes its experiences out of the sense world through the sense instruments, so the astral body out of the world which is given to him through the processes of breathing, growing, etc. And this world, in the first place, shall be designated as the life world. In order now that there should be a life world, the life organs must be built out of a world which lies beyond all life aspects, in a similar way as the forces which are necessary to the building up of the sense organs lie in a region beyond the sense region. And this world again reveals itself in its workings in the building up of the life organs. So the single domains of the life processes, breathing, warming, and nutrition, etc., are therefore permitted to point likewise to so many domains of this world. However, you have to make a note of the fact that the domains of the life processes are less strictly separated from each other than the domains of the sense perception. For example, the domain of the taste sense is, for example, very strongly separated from the sense of sight. When you consider the various domains of the life processes, they lie closer to each other. They go much more into each other. For example, the breathing goes on into the warming, and the warming goes on into the nutrition. For this reason, anthropology points in sense perceptions in essentially different sense organs. But anthropology for the life processes points to organs which all flow into each other. As the lungs, which are the primary organs of breathing, are connected with the organs of the circulation of the blood, which serve the warming. Again, these flow together with the organs of digestion, which correspond to nutrition, etc. This is an indication of the fact that the corresponding domains of that particular world in which there exist the building up forces also stand in another connection to each other from those of the forces which are used for the building up of the sense organs. The world which builds up the life organs must, in relationship to each other, be much more mobile than the world which builds up the different sense organs. Experiences of the taste sense, for example, those of the experiences of the hearing sense can meet themselves only in the common ego to which they belong. The feeling of growth, on the other hand, meets directly through itself with those processes which show themselves in the breathing process. The force feeling of growth shows itself in the comfort of the breathing, in the warming, etc., through an enhanced inner life. Every feeling kind of experience of this kind can fall together with another experience of the same kind. The domains of the sense perception, it yields itself the fact that one can use the picture of a circle, an umkreis, a circuit, in which the single domains are resting, while the ego moves itself above all of the rest of them. However, for the life processes, there yields itself out of what we have said a different picture. One can so represent them that they all are moving about, and each one can run over another. Now, however, there also exist significant connections between the sense perceptions and the life processes. Take the breathing process and connect it to the hearing perception. In both cases, the corresponding bodily organ confronts the external air. This is a pointing to the fact that for the air, the human organism in its building up is ordered through the one and the other organ. So it shows itself that the air, in reference to the human body, reveals itself in a twofold way. In one way, it configures itself externally, the breathing organ, and inserts itself into the body. The other builds the hearing organ. In this manuscript, there's a note, and the note says, varianti. There's a variation. I presume Rudolf Steiner wrote this. To say in a different way what he said before, I presume. I'm going to quote. He says here, in both cases, the corresponding bodily organ confronts the external world. This is an indication of the fact that in the external world, that particular thing reveals itself to the connection which it has to one organ as well as to the other organ. Only it shows itself that, for example, in the atmosphere, in the air, a twofold thing reveals itself. In connection to with one, there is configured the breathing organ, and this places itself into the service of the body. The other connection relates itself to the building of the hearing organ. Back to the manuscript. One is permitted to recognize that the forces which configure the hearing organ, as it were, are much more primary than those which form the breathing organ. Because in the developed human body, everything stands in mutual dependency. A human hearing organ can unfold itself only from in toward the outside. If the breathing organ is so predisposed as it shows itself. I say that again. A human hearing organ can develop itself towards the outside only if the breathing organ is so predisposed as it shows itself. Out of the organism, there grows out the breathing organ in confronting the external world. The breathing organ grows itself out as it confronts the external world, and also the hearing organ grows itself out as it confronts the external world. Only the breathing organ must be adapted to the inner bodily life, whereas the hearing organ is to be adapted to the external world, to the domain of the sound. In the growing out of the breathing organ out of the body, all you have to take into consideration here is the constitution of the body. The hearing organ must so grow itself out that it has to adapt itself to the external world of sound. For the rudiments are to the breathing organ, there doesn't need any other to exist. It grows according to the inner forces of configuration. Nevertheless, the hearing organ must grow towards an already existing rudiment. Its adaptation to the external world must precede its sprouting forth out of the inner bodily life. With that, it shows itself that the forces which form the breathing organ to become an instrument of the senses belong to a world which is much more primal, or is much higher as compared with that other world in which the forces exist, which as such reveal themselves as forming from out of the body the hearing organ as well as the breathing organ. Here we've described a relationship between the hearing organ and the breathing organ. Now, a similar sort of relationship can be shown between other sense perceptions and the life processes. Let's direct the attention upon the taste sense. The taste sense can be put in a similar connection to the secretion life process, just as the breathing process is connected to the hearing sense. In the spittle of the mouth is contained that which dissolves the food, the nutrition food, and through that makes itself tastable. A similar mindfulness as we have just presented can yield itself that the forces out of which the organs of secretion are formed themselves are less primal than those out of which have produced the taste sense. The taste sense forces are more original, more primal. Now, in the sense of such considerations, one can assume the existence of a supersensible higher being in the human being, whose forces demonstrate their existence, their workings, insofar as they can build up the human sense organs. Likewise, beneath there stand another world whose workings reveal themselves in the building up of the human life organs. This latter world, which builds up the human life organs, is felt by the astral human being as its instinctive inner experiences. Those connected with that which builds up the human sense organs make itself known in the ego human being as a sense reality. Neither the first world can come directly through revelation through the senses, neither can the second world come directly through revelation in the astral human being. Neither the first world can reveal itself directly, nor can the second world reveal itself in the astral man. First world, which builds up the senses, cannot directly reveal itself, nor can the second world, which builds up the life processes, nor can that directly reveal itself in the astral human being. I indicated that within the ego, as it were, contracted to a point, there reveals itself the supersensible world in its particular nature. In the same way can be recognized that the astral human being, in the feeling experiences which yield themselves through the life processes, can receive the revelation of a supersensible world in which the organs of these processes, the life organs, receive the Wesenheit, to receive the beingness, one, enabling to serve life, two, to configure the sense organs out of itself. These experiences that expresses itself something in which the other instinctive experiences of the astral human being flow together into one and reveal their highest reality as a configurating formative force. Now we have a note, which I presume was written by Rudolf Steiner, and which he entitles Varianti, a variant. It is said that in the ego, as it were, there is contracted to a point, that the ego, as it's contracted to a point, the supersensible world reveals itself in its particular nature. In exactly the same sense, it can be recognized that the second of the indicated worlds shows itself in the feeling experiences of the astral human being, which can be designated as life instincts. In these experiences, something expresses itself out, to which the other instinctive experiences of the astral human being flow into one. They are a picture of a supersensible world in the sense as the ego man is such a picture. End of this insertion. I presume this variante is an attempt by Rudolf Steiner to improve upon his original presentation. Let's go back to the main manuscript. The ego man and the astral man represent two human components which express themselves in inner processes. In order to make possible the ego human being, forces of a supersensible world build up the sense organs. Insofar as the human body is the carrier of sense organs, it shows itself as being built up out of a supersensible world. Let us now designate the carrier of the sense organs as the physical human body. This physical human body is permeated by the ego human being in order, with its help, to live in the sense world. Accordingly, one must, in the physical human body, regard a being which is built up out of forces which in its particular way are related to the ego itself. Within the sense world, the physical human body can show itself only in a sense quality revelation. According to its inner reality, it is a being of a supersensible kind. Now, in order to make possible the astral human being, a supersensible world builds up the life organs. The forces of this world yield themselves as being related to the experiences of the astral human being. That which builds up the physical man reveals itself in the sense world in the above indicated way. Those forces which build up the life organs are able to reveal themselves only in the instinctive feeling experiences which emanate from the life processes. They produce no sense organs, and only through sense organs can things of a sense quality announce themselves. The life organs themselves are no organs of perception. Hence there remain not only the forces which build up the life organs sense imperceptible, not perceptible to the senses. The forces which build up the life organs are not perceptible to the are not sense perceptible, but the revelations of these forces can be sense perceptible in the human being only insofar as they are feeling types of instinctive experience. This again. The life organs themselves are no organs of perception. Hence, not only are the forces which build up the life organs non-perceptible, but also the revelation of these forces in human being are also non-perceptible. They are only accessible to a feeling type of instinctive experience. And this revelation is this revelation of the life organs in the human being is designated as the etheric human body, the human etheric body. Just as the physical body is a revelation of those forces which build up the sense organs, so the ether body is a revelation of those forces which build up the life organs. However, the physical body is perceptible to the senses. The ether body is not perceptible to the senses. It can be felt only in an instinctive feeling experience. In parentheses, when we use the word etheric, just restrict yourself to what we're saying here and don't confuse it with what is given by physics in the name of ether. Close parentheses. Just as the physical human body relates itself to the ego man, so there relates itself the ether body to the astral man. The physical body, in its beingness, is so constituted that it supplies to the ego the sense experiences. The etheric body can be experienced directly by the astral man only in a feeling way. Ego must relate itself to the physical human body as the astral man relates itself to the etheric human body. So the life processes presuppose forces to which they adapt themselves insofar as the sense organs, as for example the hearing organ, configures itself out of the body in the sense of the experiences with which they do not serve themselves. The sense organ again presuppose life organs insofar as they are maintained through their processes. Try that again. So the life processes presuppose forces to which they adapt themselves insofar as they configure sense organs, as for example the hearing organ, out of the body in the sense of experiences which they themselves do not serve. I'm still confused. I'll leave that alone. I can understand the second part when he says the sense organs again presuppose life organs life organs which really maintain the sense organs. That's the best I can do. Case where Rudolf Steiner in one sentence packs ideas which should be separated into five sentences, whereas other cases he puts five sentences where he only needs one sentence, and his five sentences confuse you when one sentence would have made it clear. This is a pattern I find again and again. Actually a pattern which annoys me immensely, Rudolf Steiner. So there. So the manuscript. Out of the higher spiritual world is the physical human body formed insofar as this physical human body is a carrier of the sense organs. Out of the lower spiritual world has the etheric human body been formed insofar as this etheric body builds up the life organs. In the astral world, astral man enters in connection with the life processes insofar as these life processes reveal themselves in the life instincts. In the physical world, the ego man enters into connection with the external world presenting sense experiences such as sound, tone, warmth, light, etc., insofar as this reveals the sense world. Now we have a variant in which Rudolf Steiner, I presume, is attempting to make clear something which he knows he didn't make clear. Okay, this is what he calls a variante. In order to make possible the astral human being, build something to the characterized supersensible world, adding to the life world, another world builds up the life organs. The forces of this world show themselves related to the experiences which the astral man has in the life instincts. That builds up the physical human being, reveals itself in the sense world in the above designated way. Those forces which build up the life organs can reveal themselves in the physical world only in the life processes, because they produce the life organs, and only through such can a life process announce itself. The life organs themselves are not organs of perception, hence there remain only those forces which build up the life organs, sense imperceptible, but the revelation of these forces in the human being themselves cannot be sense perceptible, and this revelation is designated as the etheric human body. Just as the physical human body relates itself to the ego man, so the etheric human body relates itself to the astral man. The physical body, according to its nature, is so constituted that it makes also sense perceptible things. Okay, the etheric body is the builder of the life organ, can directly be experienced only in a feeling way by the astral man. Accordingly, one can distinguish One, a supersensible world in which there lie the forces which build up the sense organs. Two, a supersensible world in which there lie the forces which build up the life organs. This presupposes the first world can be called a higher world, and the second world a lower spiritual world. Three, a world in which the astral human being so stands in relationship to the life processes that these reveal themselves to him as life instincts. This presupposes thus also the second world, which can be called the astral world. Four, a world in which the ego human being reveals itself as sent through the sense organs of sense experiences. This, however, is the physical sense world. End the thesis. A bloody confusing thesis at that. God bless you, Rudolf Steiner, and God forgive me, Rick Mansell, for my outburst. I simply can't help it. I get thoroughly disgusted. Disgusted not with Steiner, with myself, at my inability to tackle this involved way of presenting ideas. But end this tape and have a cup of tea. Bye-bye.